Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Filmcast, a podcast about movies. I'm David Chen, and I can't believe one of the main stars of The Fall Guy was a love interest for the main character of one of the biggest films of 2023 that made $1 billion. But enough about Barbie and Oppenheimer, guys.
Nice. Nice. Well done. Well done. Yeah.
Joining me today is Devinder Hardwar.
Turns out the real Fall Guy was this movie for a potentially weak summer box office season.
And Jeff Cannata.
I might fall from a tall building. I might roll a brand new car. Because I'm the unknown podcaster that makes Dave Chen such a star.
Wow.
All right. Those are, of course, all vague and oblique references. To the fact that today on the podcast, we're going to be discussing The Fall Guy. Sorry, Devinder Hardwar is his name. I don't want to mess up anyone's name. But of course, we got a little bit of film news, some emails, and then what we've been watching to cover before we get to our review of The Fall Guy. You can find more episodes of this podcast at thefilmcast.com. Email us at /filmcast@gmail.com. We're across all platforms at thefilmcastpod. Including YouTube, where we post our reviews every week, and also on Instagram and TikTok, where we're The Filmcast, where we post clips from the show. Be sure to follow us across all platforms, and you can support the show at patreon.com/filmpodcast. Guys, last week we recorded our summer movie wager episode.
Oh, yeah.
A huge hit. we are mentioned
so fast. My list went into the toilet.
We were mentioned on the Empire podcast. Shout out to them as well.
Oh, I love those folks.
Yeah. Great. So thanks to them for the mention, and the summer movie wagers influence continues to grow each year. And people who follow the box office, you know, many of us put The Fall Guy on our top 10, and people who follow the box office might be aware that The Fall Guy did okay, but it did not well enough that it is very possibly not going to be in the top 10 movies of the summer at all.
It's the kids who are wrong, it turns out.
I agree. Unless this thing has some like elemental style word of mouth. Let's
go. But even Elemental barely made it onto the top 10. Yeah. So
right,
even that.
Right. Yeah. So want to call out a couple things. First of all, Jeff Cannata, obviously, we all already know, had The Fall Guy highest up on his list. So probably going to hurt Jeff the most, is my guess.
I'm shocked that all the people who loved the TV show did not turn out.
You really called it there, Jeff. Like the legions of fans.
I don't understand.
They should have held the screening at a cemetery, Jeff.
Glenn Larson has made so many shows, and among them, this is probably at the bottom, unfortunately.
Where are my Lee Major heads at?
The second thing is, I believe there is only one person among us that did not have The Fall Guy on their list at all. And also
two-time champion.
Also one person who did have Garfield, which is going to crush, apparently. And that person is Peter Cerretta. And my reaction to that is Jesse Pinkman from Breaking Bad. He can't keep getting away with this gif. He can't keep getting away with
He's
this.
He's schooling us all in real time.
Bold move, Peter. To not put The Fall Guy at all and then also put the Garfield movie. Looks like he's going to be right. That itself might be enough to just swing it right there. Like,
What does he know? What does he know?
He's not even in the movie game anymore, guys. This is embarrassing.
It's embarrassing.
This is you're embarrassing us, Serena. I know you're listening to this, Peter. You're embarrassing us, okay? All right. That is all.
The regret is immediate for this summer movie. apparently.
It took not even a week.
Sometimes it takes a couple movies.
Dreams and hopes to be dashed.
The fallout of all Jeff's good intentions.
You know, usually at least the summer, we can like enter June before I start falling asleep in a puddle of my own tears.
Follow along at thesummermoviewager.com. Thanks for all the positive feedback on the episode. Thanks to Dennis for setting up the website as usual this summer. Dennis, by the way, got straight to trolling me right away.
Amazing.
I saw.
Yeah.
Asking ChatGPT why Dave Chen put Bad Boys Ride or Die as his number 3. I just want to say that with The Fall Guy doing so badly, I'm feeling pretty good.
All bets are off, man.
All bets are off now.
Yeah.
Bad Boys and number three, very possible.
Very possible.
You know, it's like when that AI made that move that no human has ever done in the game of Go and won. This is truly that moment.
Yeah.
ChatGPT was like, I've never seen this before. But.
All hopes hinge all hopes. On Bad Boys ride or die for me now at this point. Mm-hmm. This is what I need to win. Okay. All right, folks. Let's get to an email at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Bert from Belgium writes into slashfilmcast@gmail.com. I recently watched Love Lies Bleeding and then went back to your review on the podcast where you mentioned the phenomenon of dual movies like Volcano and Dante's Peak, Armageddon and Deep Impact. This year, we had Drive Away Dolls and Love Lies Bleeding, the lesbian noir story double bill. But there was also Immaculate and The First Omen in terms of pregnant nun conspiracy movies. And yesterday, I watched the French spider horror movie Infected. And next week, Sting comes out, if I'm not mistaken. Both in yes. the spider horror genre. Are there it's any true. Others I'm missing? I feel like I am.
What about Imaginary and If?
Yes.
True. Yes. Yes.
Another great one. You know, I also saw that. So thanks to Bert from Belgium for writing into slashfilmcast@gmail.com. I also saw this weekend on Apple TV Plus, guys. I don't know if you saw. The number one and number two movies were Dune Part 2 and Madame Web.
Yeah.
And one of those is one of the greatest movies of all time that has a main character that goes on a fantastical adventure motivated by the death of a parent who gains the ability to see the future. And the other one is Dune Part 2, baby! Boom goes the dynamite! That 100% credit for that joke goes to Rob Cordero, who posted on Threads towards me.
Well, I knew that had to be from somebody else.
Yeah, it was 100% credit to Rob, but... But I had to share it with y'all on the podcast. But yeah, dual movies. Big year for dual movies. It's like old school Hollywood. We're back again, baby. We're back again. All right. One big piece of film news we wanted to discuss, and that is, I'm reading the headline here from The Hollywood Reporter, Emma Stone and Nathan Fielder re-team with A24 for Ben Mezrich's Carlson Niemann chess scandal story. End quote. For those who are patrons at patreon.com/filmpodcast, there was a saga that Jeff Cannata covered for several weeks last year, I want to say, right, Jeff?
Yeah, it does sound right. Yeah.
That had to do with a scandal in the chess world where one of the biggest stars in the chess world accused another one of cheating. I'll read here from the Hollywood Reporter story. The book is called Checkmate that Ben Mezrich wrote. And for those who don't know, Ben Mezrich, he has a thing for writing books extremely quickly and then getting them made into films. His dream,
it's a great, great
his dream is great to write books.
Scam.
Yeah.
His dream is to write books that say now a major motion picture on them, like at the store, yeah, right?
Ripped from the headlines.
So Checkmate sees the author tackling an esoteric and true life story whose story may be developing. Per the proposal, the book will spotlight the biggest scandal in the history of chess, focusing on the generational battle between Grandmaster Magnus Carlsen and the young bad boy of chess, Hans Niemann. The latter was accused of cheating in one of the pair's head-to-head matches, which became an all-consuming scandal in the world of chess and beyond, end quote. Also want to mention that apparently Nathan Fielder is going to direct this movie, and Emma Stone will produce along with her husband and producing partner Dave McCary.
It feels like this whole project was made for you, Jeff.
Yeah.
Like, really.
It's genetically engineered for Jeff's interests.
You're not wrong. I can't believe it. It does feel like I somehow manifested this with all of my hopes and dreams. I believe if you go back and listen to our first discussion of this topic, I believe I brought this up by saying, this is going to make an amazing movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the context in which I first talked about it. Is like, this
Nathan
is,
Fielder heard you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, thanks for being a patron, Nathan.
Yep.
Appreciate you. I'm very excited about this. Although, you know, it sounds like this book started being written before the end of this story happened, which is, it does not end with a crescendo. It ends with a whimper. So I don't know how this movie is going to end. But I'm confident that Nathan Fielder will mine some gold out of this, the awkwardness of this entire endeavor. I was hoping that Nathan Fielder was going to play Hans Niemann because I feel like that's good casting. That's pretty solid casting.
No casting has been announced as of now. So I'm really curious, like, is Emma Stone going to be in the movie? You know, that would be, that would make sense. So I'm really curious how that's going to play out. But what is undoubtedly true is Emma Stone and Nathan Fielder made something brilliant with The Curse, which is streaming right now on Paramount Plus. And I'm really excited to see them team up again. So
if I would not put it above Emma Stone to play Magnus Carlsen.
100%. I
mean, they're 100%. Both very attractive people.
Yeah.
And I think she could pull it off.
That would be, it would add this whole other layer to it, I think. That would be really interesting. So excited about that. But yeah, and Jeff, as you said, like, it's weird because the story, as far as we know, hasn't ended yet, right? Like, it's just...
Well, it's kind of deflated.
Right, yes. it didn't end with a bang or a whimper. It just kind of lost momentum, right? It just kind of, like, slowed to a crawl. But I'm excited about this. Also, of note, A24 apparently snapped this up. They are making some big moves recently. Apparently, they, like, made a really big offer for this. And so they're, like, they're making big moves. They want to, like... do some impressive stuff in the art in the world of movies. Civil War, another movie that like that was a huge investment from them, cost $55 million. I think it was their biggest budget movie to date. Obviously, doing pretty solidly. But yeah, it seems like A24 still on the up and up in terms of making offers on artistically interesting films.
Yeah,
we'll see how well this one does. I'm curious, like, what the box office potential for something like this is, whether it'll get theatrical release. Queen's Gambit was huge, right?
Yeah.
So
because it was on Netflix.
But maybe it was because it was on Netflix.
Those eyes. Like, people saw Anya Taylor-Joy's eyes and were like, I got to click on this and watch Queen's Gambit. And that was it.
Which is going to drive Furiosa all the way to number 5 at the box office this summer, baby.
Yeah, baby.
I will say, I mean, who knows about that? But I've given
up on the audience.
That Queen's Gambit butted up right next to this scandal, and it was all of it elevated chess to heights that it has not seen in quite a while. Chess became pretty popular online, and a lot of chess YouTubers got a huge influx of subscribers. And so, you know, it's certainly possible that this is a more mainstream topic than it ever has been.
Indeed, indeed. All right, well, we will keep our eyes out for the movie based on Checkmate, which will be...
Which, by the way, the laziest of titles.
It's not even trying anymore.
Lazy.
Right?
You can't come up with a better... It's about potentially inserting things in your rectum, and you're going to do Checkmate? Come on, buddy. There's a better pun to be found.
All right. Ben Mezrich, by the way, also wrote... Dumb Money, that book that movie is based off of. I would say he wrote a book about Twitter called Breaking Twitter.
Not good.
The Accidental Billionaires, which is the book that The Social Network was based off of. I would say his best title, Jeff, is probably Bringing Down the House, which is a book about, which is eventually made into 21, the card counting movie. So
if it was such a great title, they would have retained it for the film.
I think Bringing Down the House is actually a better title than 21, honestly.
Yes.
But that's me. 21 is pretty crappy title. Yeah.
But perhaps not one of the like the worst adaptation of his books, perhaps, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe you were kind of into it.
It's wild the level of quality of the adaptations. You know, one got made into the Academy Award. I think he won the Academy Award for best screenplay for that one, right? If I'm not mistaken.
With Aaron Sorkin?
Yeah, Aaron Sorkin, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, some of them are made into movies that no one ever sees, you know, or no one talks about. So
it's a good racket,
wild ride.
Though.
Wild ride. Wild ride.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, that is a little bit of film news for you. Let's take a quick break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more and what we've been watching right after this.
This episode of the Filmcast is brought to you by Storyblocks. Every single week, people watch 17 hours of online video and 5 million hours of video are uploaded to YouTube. Why? Because video drives results. Videos are twice as likely to be shared and can increase conversions by up to 80%. Video is the dominant way your audience wants to consume content from you, and everyone is doing it. So you need to be fast, legally covered, and able to break through the noise. Which is easier said than done when it comes to picking a stock media provider to help you move faster and create better content without legal concerns. Legacy providers just can't scale to unlimited plans without spiraling costs. And other providers offer niche or stale content or significantly limit creator protections, hanging you out to dry when a problem arises. So, how can you keep up and stand out? Well, let me tell you. You need Storyblocks. Storyblocks offers unlimited downloads of diverse and high-quality media for one predictable subscription cost. Say goodbye to expensive paperclip pricing. Storyblocks' curated stock library has everything you need to create high-quality video in one place. With over a million 4K HD footage, templates, music, sound effects, images, and more. This is the best motion library on the market, refreshed frequently with commissioned content based on customer demand. Storyblocks seeks out diverse contributors to ensure better representation in their collections, and they compensate all of their artists fairly. And the best part is, Storyblocks keeps you legally covered with clear-cut licensing and coverage so you can focus on creating, not double-checking your legal rights. Anything you download with Storyblocks is 100% royalty-free. And so easy to use, from search to editing to publishing. For a limited time, get 3 additional months free if you sign up with an annual individual license plan. Go to storyblocks.com/filmcast to take advantage of this exclusive offer, only available until the end of May 2024. The offer won't appear at checkout, but rest assured, it will be automatically added to your account shortly after you sign up. Again, that's storyblocks.com/filmcast to get 3 additional months free.
All right, folks, let's get to what we've been watching on this week's episode of the Filmcast. Devendra Hardwar, you watched one of the top films at the box office this weekend.
Yes, what I did. I saw a Star Wars movie in theaters, guys. Guess which one?
I want to say it was The Phantom Menace, which just released, I think, on its 25th
One of the not-so-good ones? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I saw The Phantom Menace in theaters. I think it's been maybe over 10 years since I've last seen this movie. And I think the last time I remember seeing it was introducing my wife to it, because she had never seen the prequels. And we're like, okay, we're bored. We're just going to... She's catching up on Star Wars stuff ahead of Force Awakens. But man... I have thoughts about this movie now, and actually you can go read more about those in Gadget. I think I appreciate this movie now, guys. Like, I think after the years of hate, the initial hatred, and then the recoil, the sheer recoil of thinking about it, and then, like, I've tried to rewatch it before, and it just feels so dull and so boring. This is a really interesting movie to rewatch now, because it is the precursor to all the CG characters that have taken over everything.
Yeah.
I think what happened is, like, Golem was so interesting and Andy Serkis was so good, everyone feels like that's where it started, right? For CG characters interacting with real world people in movies. But no, it was Ahmed Best as Jar Jar Binks. And I think that seeing that history get retold, like, people keep bringing him up, like, when people just talk about Golem, I think that's kind of important. Jar Jar is not a great character, but the sort of, like, workflow that they did to create him and build him directly led to Golem and to pretty much everything else, right? Like, a lot of that work is also in the Avatar workflow too, to create the Na'vi. So I think as a piece of, you know, media of, like, where this movie landed, I think that's fascinating to watch. The design of this movie is so interesting too. Like, I used to just be bored with it when I watched it at home, but watching it in a theater, you are really, like, surrounded by the costume design, like everything they do for Amidala, the ship design, which I think is still really cool. I just found the movie a lot more compelling than I used to. And maybe it was because we also have come through a bad run of big movies, you know, things like, I still think of Quantumania. I still think of, like, Rebel Moon, you know, after coming out of the empty horrors of those things, seeing a badly told story with some really interesting, like, design elements, I thought was kind of compelling. In my head, I was also, like, rewriting, like, oh man, what, how do you make this better? Right. How do you make the, well, you make it better by not leaving, frickin' Obi-Wan Kenobi on a ship for an hour. maybe he should hang out with the dude he's supposed to like mentor, right? Maybe that should work. Maybe the kids should be closer in age so we actually care a bit about this love story. So many choices, but then so many things still hit. I think the pod race is still a lot of fun. The sound design that was nominated for an Oscar, I think mainly for that scene, still really hits in the theater. And yeah, Duel of the Fates is awesome. Like, that's just a well done action scene, and it's kind of like a sign of what the movie should have been, right? Because when you look at the big finale action scene with Darth Maul, right, it's character development through action. It is people telling you who they are. I love the sequence where the shields come up, right? The laser shields come up. Qui-Gon Jinn meditates, sits. Darth Maul prowls like an animal. And Obi-Wan is back just like furious, like a kid, like ready to get back into the fight. And that sort of stuff is cool. And as a reminder that, yeah, George Lucas can be a great director. I just think he's a bad writer and not so great as a storyteller, unfortunately. Like the second line of the opening crawl, guys. Taxation, trade blockades. That's what got kids excited in 1999. It's frustrating, but I really liked rewatching this in theaters and engaging with this movie again. And you can see my full thoughts over at Engadget. Do you want to see this in theaters again if you have time?
No, not particularly.
Not really.
Not particularly.
Well, great conversation, guys. Thank you. Thank you.
I do want to enter into the record a text I received from my sister, which I think you guys will find amusing. I got this on Saturday. My sister texted me. The whole family went to the movies last night. We thought we were going to see Kung Fu Panda 4, but we got the times mixed up. The only other thing to watch was episode 1 of Star Wars.
Oh, man.
So that's what we watched. I know the judgment is going to be huge when I say this, but last night was the first time I ever understood and was able to follow along when watching a Star Wars movie. What a game changer. I've never really enjoyed Star Wars before, and now it makes sense.
That's the one?
That's the one that did it for her.
Not like the first one that has a very clear and direct plot and motivations. And,
I will tell you that I remember there was this girl I had a crush on in high school who I was wondering, like, hey, ask me about Star Wars episode 1. She's like, hey, I'd already seen it at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, hey, can I just watch episode 1 without having seen the others? Because it's a prequel, right? I'm like, oh, yeah, that should be fine. Then you watch episode 1 and there's all these references to stuff that you wouldn't know about unless you like the Force.
I think you can watch all the stuff
that's explained in this, you know, like,
yeah.
Suffice to say, she was very confused. And
the thing is, a whole generation of kids grew up with that as their first Star Wars. And that is like people like Jar Jar Binks. That's why there are a lot of like Star Wars kids shows.
Yeah.
And they seem to have liked that trajectory. You know, they started with Anakin as a kid.
I will say, if you know, watching all of the behind the scenes footage and stuff that they released over the years, it is clear that the very best designers on the planet brought their A game and wanted to, you know, come to the feet of the master and impress him. Right. And I think that's why the design of the prequels is just unparalleled, because it was like the very best of the best got the chance to work on their dream job and got to go meet George Lucas and try to appease him. And he was just sleepwalking his way through all of it. But that's why like the design is just incredible in those movies and kind of wasted, you know, in my opinion.
It's kind of infuriating because it's like, if somebody who knew how to tell a story had this, like freaking Tony Gilroy was doing this or something, like the way he would spearhead the destruction of democracy alongside the fall from grace for a chosen one, like that would be interesting. It's just fascinating to see Lucas like take every wrong turn, every like, Obi-Wan and this kid don't need to hang out. And in fact, we should spend more time with Jar Jar pod racing, and Obi-Wan should just be off screen. You know, Ewan McGregor in 1999 at his peak hotness, we should not see him. In fact, that makes total sense.
He just needed somebody that could say no to him or that could rein him in some way.
Yeah.
If he had hired a director to direct it and he had produced it.
I think Spielberg was like, Hey buddy, like isn't that the story? Like tap me in.
It's sad of what could have been with that movie because you're right. There are these elements in it that are incredible, incredible. I mean, John Williams is bringing his A game. the actors are bringing their A game. It's the designers that's are bringing
debatable.
Their A
that's
game.
More debatable, but the actors are doing their best. I feel like doing their best is probably you can say. Yeah.
It's a sad
with those words.
Sad what if, in my opinion. That's what the prequel trilogy will always be to me. And the sequel trilogy as well. It's all a sad what if.
I'm totally going to be rewatching Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith in theaters because, like, I'm on the prequel game. I'm on like a bandwagon of people who I think are revisiting these movies now, and I always kind of liked Attack of the Clones. I hope we can like track down the Tobey Maguire 85-minute cut at some point because Peter Serretta wrote that up at Slash Film. I recall in like 2012.
I think you're thinking of Topher Grace.
Topher Grace, yeah.
Doing Gerardo, yeah.
Topher Grace is, you know, they're all interchangeable. But that's the thing. That would be really compelling to watch right now, too.
It is ironic that Topher Grace played Eddie Brock, who was sort of not Peter Parker. Anyway, there's an
alternative
there.
Peter
there's
Parker.
There's a connection there.
There is a connection there.
Here are the associations I have with this movie, Phantom Menace. I think it's come a really long way in the culture. I think a lot of people, I remember the hype around it.
Remember the trailer.
For a decade.
Oh, man. Yeah,
people would go, people today cannot even conceive of the hype around this movie.
Absolutely
people
true.
Would literally go buy a ticket to a movie that had the trailer in front of it, watch the trailer, and just walk out of the movie. Now you can't even get people to buy a ticket to a movie. Like, let alone buy a ticket to a movie trailer, right? There was no YouTube back then, or YouTube wasn't as big back then. You know, there was no...
No, there was no YouTube.
Yeah, yeah. There was... And so it's like... I think it was like Meet Joe Black. They would buy a ticket to like Meet Joe Black, watch the trailer for Phantom Menace, and then walk out. Right?
Get
like
the hell out of there.
Because all they wanted to see was just a glimpse of another Star Wars thing.
Well, it was a great freaking trailer, too. Like,
it was
really
a great
captured
trailer.
The vibe.
Incredible
trailer.
It was
what you want to see. Yeah.
The other element that is hard for people to wrap their heads around is how long there had been no Star Wars.
Yes.
How long?
Decades. Decades.
Decades of nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, it was 1983. Books. So
there was
almost
like the Timothy
decades.
Zahn extended universe. You know,
yes.
Which I read,
oh my
which
god!
I read.
We all rushed out and went to the store and bought those books because we were so ravenous for more Star Wars. And Marvel was doing some comic books, but nobody took them really very seriously. They weren't canon. They weren't. This was the idea that Star Wars was coming back to be a thing that you could consume more of.
Yeah.
Like we're drowning in Star Wars. We're drowning in.
Yeah.
Genre. There was just no genre storytelling in 1999. The idea that this was going to happen at all felt like the most amazing thing. There's just no way to convey that to people now.
Yeah. But also like people were anticipating this a couple months before The Matrix hit, you know? So 1999 was like the time where like, oh, shit's just getting back.
Yeah.
Like The Matrix is like, oh, this is the next generation of storytelling.
Yeah.
Episode one was like, oh, our love for what was in the past is really kindling the love for this. And then a couple of years later, you get Lord of the Rings. So it's like, I look at this movie as like a really interesting moment of cinema.
Truly.
I think also the journey has been incredible, unbelievable amounts of hype to go see another Star Wars movie, seeing it and trying to convince yourself that it wasn't horrible.
Yes.
Right. Because you spent all this months hyping yourself up for it. And then it was actually pretty bad in a lot of ways. And yet, as we've discussed, had some really good elements to it. Then seeing the second and third film, which were also bad, in my opinion. And then those movies persisting in the culture. Like, as you said, kids discovering them, people appreciating them, memes being made out of them, the score still being listened to. Like,
I mean, there's hundreds of episodes of The Clone Wars, you know, like that's what kids really tie to.
But the movies have continued to have cultural staying power. And that means, like, despite the actual quality of the movie, despite all the problems of the movie, there is something there that is worthwhile. You know, I'm reminded of Bob Iger's comments about George Lucas watching The Force Awakens. And this is from his book, The Ride of a Lifetime. Okay, so Kathleen Kennedy screened The Force Awakens for George Lucas. And according to Bob Iger, quote, he didn't hide his disappointment. There's nothing new, he said. In each of the films in the original trilogy, it was important to him to present new worlds, new stories, yes. new characters, new technologies. In this one, he said, there weren't enough visual or technical leaps forward, end quote.
Spot on.
And this, you know, despite all the problems of the original trilogy, he tried to show us something new in every yes. single one. And there's that resonates with people. That has continued to resonate after all these decades. Again, despite all the Gungans, considerable problems, the
battle droids,
right, all that shit,
Darth Maul, like yeah. there's so many new visual exactly. ideas.
Yeah, and so despite all the problems we have, like mm-hmm. I think there's a reason that these movies are still people know about them, still talk about them. Unlike a lot of other movies, you know, I don't see people talking about Solo, A Star Wars Story very much, but I still see people talking about Phantom Menace. Right, it's still in the culture, and so it is worth acknowledging. In that way for me. I have a lot of mixed feelings about it, but I would say
like if you have mixed feelings about this movie as I did, like if you have time, you have a spare night, spare matinee, maybe go check this out. Like it is worth sitting through this in the theater. And also something I want to briefly mention is that I sat through the entire credits just like kind of processing my feelings of rewatching this movie. I forgot that there was actually an extended preview of the Acolyte, which is yeah. the new show that's taking place in the High Republic era. I saw the trailer for that initially. And I was like, that looks cool. I'll be down with it. Carrie-Anne Moss is a Jedi.
I'm just excited to see Carrie-Anne Moss being a badass.
Carrie-Anne Moss is a bad eye Jedi. Yes. So this extended preview though, I was like, when I saw that trailer initially, I was like, okay, Crouching Tiger vibes. Cause there is like Wuxia stuff. There's yeah. wire work. There's like right. really cool stuff. The preview I got for this thing is a full on, basically the entire fight scene that enters, it's kind of previewed in the trailer of somebody approaching, I think it's Amanda Stenberg's character approaching Carrie-Anne Moss saying, are you her? And they have like a 3 or 4 minute, incredibly well choreographed, stunningly shot, like clearly an homage to Crouching Tiger. And it ends with who trained you? And I got chills because like I knew exactly what that was doing. So maybe I was in a Star Wars mindset. You know, I have Star Wars bias for sure, but I hope people check out that show because just from that glimpse alone, like the stuff we're seeing what that show is doing is kind of what I'd love to see more from the movies, like really pushing the way we treat Star Wars and these powers and everything differently. And yeah, I'm super excited for The Acolyte now because of this.
All right. Well, that's
exciting.
That's Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace. It is out in theaters right now. I got to say, I did find it pretty depressing what the box office was this weekend.
Yes.
So for those who don't know,
not bode well.
The Fall Guy made $28 million. Phantom Menace, number two at the box office, made $8 million. Challenger, $7 million. There's nothing wrong with Phantom Menace making $8 million. Mm-hmm. Like, in a quote-unquote normal weekend, pre-COVID or whatever, having a movie like Phantom Menace make $8 million is great. It's the
Challenger's number three. That's amazing. Yeah.
But it's the fact that it made more money than Challenger's, which is yeah. in its third weekend, I think, or second weekend. You know, that movie's awesome and people should mm-hmm. be turning out to see that movie and people should be turning out to see The Fall Guy. And instead, you know,
nobody's turning out.
People prefer a movie they can stream at home, right? On yeah. Disney Plus.
Again, we say every year, we don't know anything about how audiences think and how audiences react to things. I think that's more true than ever. I think one thing we can ask though is maybe The Fall Guy should not have cost that much money. You know, maybe that shouldn't be the kind of barrier to make a fun, big budget action movie. Like, yeah. That's all a part of this, and we'll talk about all this at the summer. I'm sure.
It's hard for any of these movies to compete when Madam Web is available at home.
It's so true.
What can you do?
It's just crushing.
Just stay home.
It's crushing on the Netflix charts. Okay. That's Star Wars Phantom. Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace. It's available in theaters right now. It's one thing Devinder Hardware has been watching. Let's take a break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more and what we've been watching right after this. I had a chance to watch Unfrosted, the new Jerry Seinfeld-directed movie about the making of Pop-Tarts.
Does one really watch Unfrosted, or does it watch you, Dave?
Sometimes when you stare into the abyss.
Yes.
Sometimes when you stare into Unfrosted, you find that Unfrosted stares back at you.
Is the experience of watching this movie like staring at a toaster? And waiting and hoping
maybe
something exciting
maybe more like sticking your hand
happen?
In a hot toaster.
This is a weird movie. It is getting completely annihilated online. I think it has like a 40% Rotten Tomatoes. It's interesting. You know, we've talked in the past about how sometimes when people smell, like critics smell blood in the water, they'll just like really go after something, and I feel like this is kind of one of those things.
Well, I mean, why would they do that, right? I mean, Jerry Seinfeld just said how much he loved movies as a medium and how much he believes in cinema, right?
This has to be one of the most disastrous press stories I've seen.
What's the Batman quote? You either die a hero or
live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
This is the Jerry Seinfeld trajectory. It's like, he's now the villain. He's the villain.
Yeah. You know, the reason Unfrosted was not funny was because of woke, guys. It's because of the woke police. That's why.
It's funny that he was talking about the end of cinema, though, and he really was just talking about his movie. His movie was, in fact, the end of cinema. This is it. This is nothing. There's no coming back from this.
For those who don't know, basically, Jerry Seinfeld has been on this press tour where he's kind of saying really silly things that are like revealing himself to be kind of an unpleasant, cranky dude. It's kind of
rich man.
How I describe, like an out of touch rich dude who's kind of unpleasant.
Who's 70.
And anyway, Unfrosted. It's a movie about the making of Pop-Tarts is what the movie's about. And the way I would describe this is it would be like if Kellogg's hired Jerry Seinfeld to do a Super Bowl ad that dramatized the making of Pop-Tarts. And then they made a 96-minute movie based off of that Super Bowl ad. It's kind of like, maybe for like, if you watch a 10-second or a 15-second clip, you're like, oh, I could see that could be kind of clever.
Funny.
Yeah, that could be kind of clever.
I like those actors. Yeah.
And then dragged out over 96 minutes, it becomes interminable and not particularly fun to watch. I didn't really laugh. Like, I understand why Jerry Seinfeld would find this funny, right? Like, but I don't think Jerry Seinfeld's comedy has evolved very much.
The over kids the need more Jack LaLanne references, Dave. That's what the kids want.
So Devinder Harder, you watched Unfrosted as well. What was your reaction to this movie?
I'm sort of fascinated by how bad it is. And my wife is also like, she is more of a diehard Seinfeld fan than me. Like, she watched all of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee and stuff. And those conversations are great. Like, him just chilling and hanging out and talking about life, I think is funny and entertaining. Him apparently trying to craft a narrative. This is one of the strangest things I've ever seen. There are dumpster children in this movie. There are famous people playing just random roles. Hugh Grant's in this movie.
It has one of the most star-studded casts.
Incredible.
I've seen in a movie, right?
It almost feels like he's trolling Netflix. He's like, bet you wouldn't hire Hugh Grant for this bit part, right? Yeah. Give me the money, Netflix. Let's keep going. I am fascinated by this movie. It is absolutely terrible, but man, what a run for Jerry Seinfeld. These past few weeks, because not only is it the bad press tour, but there's also the news about him and his wife funding the Palestinian protesters at Columbia. They're funding the people fighting the college kids. The college kids are just trying to stand up for equality. Jerry Seinfeld and his wife are like, no, maybe you should not. Amazing. Great run, Jerry Seinfeld.
I have not seen this movie.
I'm looking forward to Jeff defending this
movie.
Jeff,
you need to see this movie.
Next week's episode of the podcast.
I don't know about it. I don't know if I will watch this movie. I don't have much desire to watch this movie. But here's the problem I have with the world that we live in now. It's not enough to like disagree with a guy and say the movie he just made isn't very good. The discourse has become, and you know what? Seinfeld, the TV show, was never good.
Right. Yeah,
it
right,
was
yeah,
terrible.
Yeah.
And we all,
I will like, not.
Are
I
you
will
insane?
Not abide. Okay. I do not abide that. I do not.
I'm not
abide
saying
that.
You guys are saying
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The conversation tends to like oversee.
It's the crazy. It always has to be that. It always has to turn into. And you know what? All the people who ever liked that show were wrong. And all we now can see clearly because we can see who he always was. And it's like, come on.
That's what the mute button's for. Like when you encounter those people on Twitter.
It feels like that is the pervasive sentiment. It's like we can't just criticize a person now. We have to retroactively recontextualize everything they ever did. It's like,
I'll say within my feeds, I have not seen people doing that.
I have not seen that either. And to be 100% clear, none of us are doing that here on the podcast.
No, I was not insinuating either of you were doing that. I'm just saying even that has been like, a thing I have seen quite a lot of. Huh. And it frustrates me because, you know, this whole thing of like, you know, Seinfeld was never even good. It's like it. More people watched that show than literally anything on television right now.
I think there is a conversation to have, though, about Seinfeld being the least interesting part of his own show. I think that is a conversation I would have, because I think I watch a lot of reruns with my wife. You look at Julia Louis-Dreyfus, right? You look at pretty much everybody around him, I think, are doing so much more and having so much more
fun. That's the point of being the straight man.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the role of the straight man. That's the role. He's standing at the center of chaos. And he's supposed to be the least interesting part. Anyway, I'm not going to defend Jerry Seinfeld. I just think it's insane when we sort of now have to decide that, you know, this like cultural touchstone is also bad because the guy said some stupid things, whatever.
All right. So Unfrosted, I would not say I laughed at this movie. I maybe chuckled once. That's how
stared
I describe
in horror
it.
Is more of
what it's
I
kind
did.
Of like, it's like, hey, wouldn't it be funny if like the cereal company was run like the mafia, you know, like, and they were like, you know, we're extremely cutthroat about making the Frosted Flakes and stuff. It's like, okay. Yeah. I mean, I understand. And he's always been fascinated with breakfast stuff. This goes all the way back to Seinfeld. So it's kind of like this. If this movie was made 20 to 30 years ago in its exact same form as now, it would actually probably fit more with kind of the comedy of that time.
I don't know. The other question I have is like, Jerry Seinfeld, you are richer than God. You have so much influence. You can do whatever you want. You can fund any projects. You can anything that springs from your mind. You can create and make it a reality. And what Jerry Seinfeld does is a wacky take at the world of breakfast cereals and the creation of Pop-Tarts. Like that is what he channeled his energy into as well. So like, I had a lot of thoughts watching this, and that was certainly one of them. Like, but this is it. This
sometimes you just get something in your, you know, it's like a Steven Spielberg. He's like, I always wanted to make a West Side Story. And it's like, why now, Steven Spielberg? Doesn't matter.
Sure,
it's something he always wanted to do. And
from
Jerry Seinfeld probably always wanted to explore the making of Pop-Tarts.
I think we have the evidence for that from his stand-up and from Seinfeld.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So not a movie that Devinder Hardwar and I enjoyed. I think this is a very divisive movie because I've seen a lot of people say, this movie's hilarious. You should go watch it. You know, so I am curious what people will think. Jeff Cannata, I think, might like it. We'll see.
It is fascinating in its badness.
Damning by faint praise. I have no intention of watching it, but maybe...
I do not say this in a pejorative fashion. It is kind of Jeff-style humor.
It is.
But
literally
the problem
just derided this for 15 minutes and then went, you know what, though? There is one idiot on the show.
Well, the thing is, Jeff, you know this, Jeff. Your puns and your punnery and your limerick,
the dad jokes,
it is
God tier. God tier.
It is
the
spice in the stew. It is the spice in the stew. It's not the stew, though, right? And this is.
Oh, you're saying you two guys are the stew?
No, I'm saying we all, and you when you're not doing those things are the stew. Okay, and this is if you made 90 plus minutes of just the spice.
I'm not going to deny it. I love goofballery. You know, I like a goofy fun time. I might enjoy this, but nothing I've seen is.
I think if you watch the first 10 minutes, you'll know if you're going to enjoy it or not.
That's exactly it.
It's a way to just dip your toe in.
If this movie is my type of goofballery, but I like something that's just silly for silly's sake. If that's what this is,
yeah. Because whatever you get in the first 10 minutes, it does not change its tone or
I think
sensibility from that point forward.
I think I was the only one of us that loved History of the World Part Two last year.
I liked it,
which I felt like was silliness for silliness' sake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, anyway, that's Unfrosted. It is streaming right now on Netflix. Jeff Cannata, something you have been watching this week.
Well, I've been watching a new show on Apple TV Plus called Sugar.
Mm-hmm.
This stars Colin Farrell and is ostensibly a noir detective show. And I've been watching it over a couple of weeks and didn't talk about it last week, but I was excited to talk about it this week because I'd watched five episodes of the show and I'd been really digging it. And I had all these things I wanted to say about Sugar.
Surely nothing world chattering can happen to the show, Jeff.
I was dude, I'm locked into this show. I'm digging it. I had all these takes on how I was going to present it to the audience.
Because
I really like it. And I feel like, oh man, you know what this show is? It's this. And then episode 6 happened.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And Holy moly. Everything I was going to say became invalid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the challenge. How to talk about the show at all.
Right, without spoiling it. Without spoiling it.
The thing is about Sugar is you should watch 6 episodes of this show or 0 episodes of the show. That would be my suggestion to people is either don't watch this show or at least watch 6 episodes of it. Because it does something that I have really wanted to see. I have talked about this a lot over many years, where I've always wanted to see a show that was one thing for a long time and then became another thing. And that's what happens in episode 6, I think. We'll see when on Friday when episode 7 comes out. But it is a very audacious episode overall, episode 6. Now, I think the show was awesome before that. I think the first 5 episodes are awesome. So fun. It's basically the idea of the show, or at least what I was going to say about it before episode 6 happened, is what if one of us, an obnoxious, film-obsessed cinephile, was also a
was
hard-boiled...
Was attractive.
Was also a hard-boiled detective.
Right, right.
The idea is this dude is this hard-boiled, noirish L.A. detective who... And he's not really a detective. He's just a guy who gets missing people back. And he kind of works outside the law. But he's obsessed with old movies, with the idea of movies, and kind of contextualizes everything through the lens of movies. And this show does a really awesome thing where it intersperses footage from old movies into moments from the show. So, you know, you'll have the audio or even visuals of a classic black and white film or some, you know, even more modern movies that is kind of commenting on the plot or the circumstance that you find yourself in this show. And I thought that was so cool. I've never seen anybody quite do that like that before. Really neat. In fact, a really cool companion piece to Fall Guy in a lot of ways, because like Fall Guy is kind of about movies and movie making too. Anyway. But also like one of the cool things about this character is that he kills him with kindness. He's like his goodness is his superpower, you know? Anyway, that's all the stuff I was going to say about the show before episode 6 happens. I think the show is awesome. I love how it's shot. I think Colin Farrell is doing top tier level work in it. He's great. It's written in a really cool way. It's stylized. The characters are interesting. It's dark in really intriguing ways. But I would love to have a full spoiler discussion of this show at some point with you guys, because yep, episode 6 is gobsmacking.
Here's where I say there is value in spoilers, especially for people. It's like selling the concept of Sugar, Colin Farrell doing noir-y things. I'm down with that. I'll see that at some point. Hearing about what happened in episode 6, I was like, now I have to see the show. Now I have to see the show because of what this is.
The experience of hearing about it, I believe can never compare to the experience I had.
They're just two different experiences.
But I'm already into it.
Yeah. Even you're saying he would never even want
to check
out
the show.
I would never
watch
the show,
Jeff.
Is what I understand that.
Yeah.
But I would have liked to have tried to convince you to check out the show without relying on that. Because as I said, the first 5 episodes are great. They're great. I think. I don't know. Dave, you've been watching it, right?
I have seen the entire series at this point. Mm-hmm. And other than the factual descriptions of the plot, my feelings about the show are pretty much exactly the opposite of everything Jeff Canada.
This is what I have been hearing, Jeff, is that everybody is pretty meh on this show. So you got to give me something
I'm exaggerating, but only like, I actually think you're right. Like in the sense that the noir-y stuff is kind of cool. I think the references to the actual footage are super clunky and not welcome. And then, you know, I think the show is actually a train wreck. Like, I think it's actually a disaster of a show. Like, and once you see like how it all plays out, like, I will say the thing that happens in episode 6, which everyone has been talking about, they haven't said, you know, we're not going to say what it is, but it recontextualizes the entire show. I don't think the show earns that thing that it does. And I'll just leave it at that. You know, like, I would say the show is not worth watching and you should not spend your time on it. Because here's the thing. My wife was not feeling well this week. And so we're like, hey, let's binge a show. Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I'm like, well, I heard this show Sugar has this wild shit that happens. I don't know what it is.
Yes.
But like, let's watch this. And then we watched it and my wife was so angry at
I would like a divorce now.
Yeah. She freaking hated this thing. And like, I
she
also
hated it before that or because of that,
not just because of it, but because of like when you take it as a whole, it's like, does it make sense that it all played out like this? And it doesn't in my opinion. So, big swing, you know, got to put that out there. Big swing.
That is the kind of thing that I have wanted for a long time. I've fantasized about making a show that is one thing mm-hmm. and then hard pivots into another thing. And I think obviously you have more information than I have because you've seen subsequent episodes.
Yeah, but I think I don't know, Jeff. I think you'll like how it plays out. You know, like there are people who like defend what has gone on in episode. Mm-hmm. Like it's very divisive. It's the unfrosted of noir.
I'm glad we're keeping me in that corner.
but yeah, there's a lot of people who are like, oh, I love, you know, the Daily Beast. They're like,
yeah.
Some people think this thing that happened in episode 6 is terrible. We think it's awesome. You know, like, so there's a lot of people.
Awesome.
Who, yeah.
Jeff, did you ever see The Leftovers, Jeff?
Yes.
All of it?
I think I pieced out halfway through the third season, which is the last season.
But right that is a show that kind of did start one way. And then by the end, definitely pivoted into a lot of like weirdness and a lot of different things.
I don't think this show changes genres.
I know. Yeah. I'm well aware. Also, just saying that dream, Jeff, is hard to achieve without pissing everybody off. So if you do manage to accomplish this someday,
that's what I think is so cool about this is that it kind of doesn't care about that. Mm-hmm.
Here's what I will say, Jeff. And you probably agree with me on this. I think, you know, this show was released week to week and Fallout was released binge style and it should have been reversed. Like, well, if this show had come out all at once, I think people would be way less
I disagree upset. So much.
Okay.
Because I think both of them should have been week to week. I think this show being week to week, what would have happened is this new thing would have been out and about in episode 1 and everybody would have known about it and it would have been annoying because it would have been like, wait until episode 6. I had no idea. I was just watching the 6th episode of the show I like. I didn't know that something was going to change. That's what I loved about it is that it was
right.
It was just the next episode of something I like.
Yeah, I think my argument for the binge style is I think sometimes it's worth it to know what show you're watching.
For some people.
Exactly. A lot of people like knowing what type of show they're watching. I think is my argument, right? I think surprised by things, and that's cool. But I'm saying, like, I think a lot of people feel like, well, what the hell was I doing for the last five episodes? You know, so
I would compare this most to is From Dusk Till Dawn, which is like it's one movie, and then it is a different movie. Mm-hmm. It's two different movies that are sutured together, and I think that is so neat. That just that magic trick is so neat, and obviously that's not going to work for everybody, but I do think that, you know, the vast majority of shows aren't that to have one to do it is like, because it would be one thing. The thing I'm contrasting it with is, oh God, this feels like it just happened recently. What is it? It's something where it's like, this does not make sense until you get to the twist. And then like, oh, I feel like I just watched something like that where it's like, oh, well, that's why I haven't understood anything that's happened up till this point is because I didn't have a key piece of information. In contrast, what I think Sugar is doing is it is a perfectly, for me, it was an awesome this thing, just in the same way that From Dusk Till Dawn is like this awesome crime movie. And then From Dusk Till Dawn like becomes a vampire movie, right? Like, but the crime movie was awesome. I still think. And I think that about Sugar is like this noir detective thing is awesome. And then it's like, oh, well, now it's something completely different. And I'm excited about that. So yeah, I'll be curious
how you feel about how the show ends. So yeah,
I'll talk about it again.
But anyway, the show is Sugar and it is streaming right now on Apple TV Plus, and Jeff loves it. And I literally watched the entire show in the last 4 days. It's not that long. The episodes are like 30 minutes each.
Yeah, they're not long. It feels like an hour show, but it isn't.
Yeah. And
I would watch more of it, but I don't have access to more of it.
Yeah. I was not a fan of the way the show ended, but it's very polarizing. You may like it. And so I leave that possibility open. It's Sugar on Apple TV Plus. All right, Devendra Hardware, hit us up with something else you've been watching.
Yeah, real quick. I checked out the latest movie from Ryosuke Hamaguchi. He's the director of Drive My Car. He just did a movie called Evil Does Not Exist.
Evil Does Not Exist. I heard about this. And is it on? Do you watch it in theaters? Do you get a screener?
I got a screener, but it's in theaters right now. So I think if you are a fan of Drive My Car and the sort of like elliptical and ponderous way this guy creates his crafts his narratives, I think this is another intriguing entry from him. I also saw Wheel of Fortune Fantasy, which is a nice like series of stories that he did. That's on Criterion Channel. I'm fascinated by this movie because it's sort of like an eco thriller. It's about a small village close to Tokyo, but maybe like an hour's drive away, where a guy who does odd jobs lives a very simple life with his daughter. It's a small place, so it's like everybody gets water from fresh spring water from a local creek. You know, everybody helps each other out. It's a really small community. The conflict in this movie is that a local talent agency, for some reason, wants to start a glamping camp in their village. And it's entirely about how the village responds to that situation. And this is like one of those movies where the most like dynamic and like worked up this movie gets is a local committee meeting between the people working for the glamping company and the locals. So it's like going to like one of your community board meetings or something, like hearing people complain about, oh, this is going to ruin our water or something. I found this movie really compelling. It's not 3 hours long, like Drive My Car. It is, I think, like barely 90 minutes, but it is a really interesting story about a community like this and people who feel like they may be getting taken advantage of by city folks. Like this is kind of a movie about a sense of control and what people may do when they feel like they're losing that sense of control, but also how like city people view people living in rural villages and things like that. The title itself is like kind of enigmatic. I found it really fascinating and incredibly well shot and just really compelling and interesting. This is also one of those movies I think both of you guys would hate. So not recommending it to you guys, but I think for listeners who like the slow, ponderous Hamaguchi stuff, I think it would be really interesting. I think people would dig it.
Yeah. Jeff, did you ever watch Drive My Car? I forget.
Yes.
We reviewed that, right?
We did.
Yeah. And I think we were all fans.
We all liked it.
Yeah, we all liked it. Yeah.
I think it's too long, but I liked it.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to this one. But
No. I could put the bets down. After we just talked about The Beast and after knowing what you like, Jeff, like I would not put the bets down that you guys would like this movie. Maybe check it out. I'm not stopping you from checking it out. It's just like I'm putting
He's not my bet physically on the... holding us back from checking it out.
But don't complain to me if you don't like it, okay? Like I warned you. I do think for people who like it's a very slow cinema type of style, but people who are into that stuff, like, hey, a shot of trees for 2 minutes, you know, where you are really engrossed in the music and the overall experience of it. It almost feels like an experimental narrative. I heard that it kind of started as an art project between him and the composer from Drive My Car. But he's also somebody who it's kind of weirdly reflective of him, too, because Drive My Car got a lot of praise, guys. Like, he had to do a lot of press. Like, he got a lot of attention for that movie, even though he's been making, like, small indie films forever. And I think the response people have gotten from him is, like, he does not want that again. Like, he wants to be in his little village making things and, like, not getting all the attention of the world. Like, he just wants to be left alone to make his art, you know? And this movie almost feels like a response to that, of like big corporate cinema trying to come in and pick his brain for ideas and things like that. So
interesting.
I think in that respect, it's kind of interesting too.
Evil does not exist in limited release right now. All right. I had a chance to watch a movie called The Contestant. The Contestant is a documentary on Hulu, and it tells the story of Nasubi. And Devendra, you were the one that first alerted me to this story. But anyway, basically, they did an
old... I think I alerted you to the story, because the story has been around for a while.
Right. So they did an old boy in real life, right? An old boy, somebody gets snatched up in the opening scene and is locked away for many, many years without any explanation. And basically, they did the same thing to a random real guy in Japan, and they broadcast it for the nation's enjoyment. Essentially, the way it worked is this guy who is kind of a struggling, aspiring comedian. He volunteers to go on this show. They bring him into this room. They take all of his clothes, and they give him a stack of like note cards and also a magazine rack. And they say, you need to survive based off of stuff you can win in magazine sweepstakes.
You will get no food. You will get nothing else.
No food, no clothes. And and yeah, this documentary kind of shows how that all played out. I think the documentary is only okay. It doesn't address really some of the deep issues that this thing brings up.
Deeply problematic.
Particularly the last third of the documentary really kind of loses its way and goes in a different direction than I think. Like, I want the documentary to be about just this thing and like exploring the implications of the fact that like millions of people watch this guy. And what does that mean about society? What does that mean for this guy? Apparently, he didn't make very much money off of this whole thing, even though his diaries were so like. This could never happen in America because the people who made this would have been sued out of existence, right? Like, but in Japan, it was possible. And this all happened before Big Brother, before like Survivor, before reality TV. So he was like one of the first reality show stars. And it's a really interesting look into human nature, into like what we need as humans to survive. Because the hardest part for this guy was the loneliness. Like he was trapped in this room by himself. And
like for over a year
Over a year. And
yeah,
also the thing that's wild about it is he could leave at any time he wanted to.
That like, is the wildest thing.
Yes. Like it was not, the doors were not locked.
Mm-hmm.
If he wanted to escape, he could have, and he didn't. And it's like, why didn't he, you know, like,
it's very much about that societal constraint too, right? Of like, you say we'll do a thing, right?
Yeah,
he committed to doing the thing. So
he was not to be released until he made 1 million. He earned prizes amounting to 1 million yen. I think if you are like me and you're kind of curious about this story, then The Contestant is a very reasonable way to get all that information. If you already know the story, I don't think it's going to ever very much.
Like it's in This American Life. There was an episode in 2014 called Human Spectacle that was featured in, and that's a 23-minute long story. So
they did get it all there. They did get Nasubi to appear on camera and talk about it. Like that's inherently valuable, right?
Yeah.
To talk about his experience. They also got the producer of the show to talk about it, and he seems to have very little remorse, if at all. He's not even pretending to feel bad about it, and
he's like, why should I? My job was to make good TV,
right?
I made the best ass TV in Japan. I succeeded.
It's very disturbing to see first of all, I think if you're the public, you don't even see the whole story. You see like they edited down like 1 week of footage into 6 minutes, right? And so you only see like the fun bits, and then you don't see that this guy is going through like actual psychological torment.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really troubling.
Losing language ability, things like that. It's rough.
It's really troubling and chilling. And the documentary is, like I said, only okay because it doesn't really get at some of these deeper issues.
That's disappointing because this is such like an inherently great story
that I
feel like, any documentary worth their salt,
it misses some opportunities to like really explore the moral implications of this, to kind of think through, like, what is it about humans that make them comply? What is it about, like, Japanese culture versus American culture, where I think, like, this show probably wouldn't be possible or as possible in America, you know? Who knows? Mm-hmm. All interesting questions that the documentary does really nothing at all to explore. That's so if you want to get a really interesting, like, streamlined information conveyed to you, then The Contestant on Hulu is a decent way to do it. Otherwise, I would skip it if you're already familiar with the show. Let's take one last break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more and what we've been watching right after this. All right, Jeff Cannata, hit us up with something else you've been watching.
Well, I'm very excited. One of my favorite half-hour comedies is back. It's Hacks on Hulu. Or no, excuse me, on Max, the one to watch for HBO. yeah. And season 3 has started. I watched the first 2 episodes. It retains its charm. It's incredible, high quality. I love Jean Smart. I think she is incredible in this show. And I love how the first 2 episodes of Hacks season 3 seems to have decided to put our characters on a path of really of joy and happiness, which is unique for the show.
Oh, that's so that can't last.
That's exactly right. That can't last. But I'm enjoying it while it does. The first 2 episodes have been released. I am back on Hacks. Cannot recommend the show higher. If you didn't watch the first 2 seasons, catch up. It is very fun, very funny. Great performances. The premise is basically a Joan Rivers type. Jean Smart plays a sort of older woman comedian who should have been the host of The Tonight Show, didn't get it, and is sort of just living out her days in Vegas, you know, doing nightclubs and kind of sleepwalking through it, but wealthy, and gets a young writer to join her, and who challenges her to do something even better with her life. And it's great. It's great. So watch Hacks. Season 3 has started, and it continues to be great.
All right. I think we each have one last thing to mention real quick. Devinder Hardwar, hit us up.
Real quick. And actually, just a slight update to Evil Does Not Exist. That is in limited release now. It's spreading out soon. So I wanted to mention that. You will probably be able to see it this weekend. I know it's opening up in Atlanta and elsewhere this weekend. So check that out. I saw The TV Glow, which is the new film from Jane Schoenbrunn. And they had made this movie called, We All Went to the World's Fair from a couple years ago. And that was a really interesting movie. And I think this one may straight up be a masterpiece. We are planning to talk about this movie in a couple of weeks, so I'm not going to say too much here, but it's about 2 teenagers who become really obsessed with the TV show in the 90s. And that is something I relate to quite a bit. And I don't think anything has ever captured that feeling of becoming so attached to a TV show when the world around you may not be so great. You know, this movie is ultimately an allegory for the trans experience in America and in the suburbs and certainly in the 90s. But I also think, like, there is a lot of stuff that people can relate to here too. So check this out if you can. I know this release is also spreading out, and yeah, I'm looking forward to our full discussion of this.
I think it's out in limited release this weekend, and it will be rolling out to more cities in the weeks to come.
Yep.
I had a chance to watch the greatest roast of all time of Tom Brady on Netflix. This streamed live on Sunday night, apparently with no major issues, which is not taken for granted when it comes to Netflix live events. And I gotta say, guys, the comedy roasts, they're a guilty pleasure of mine. I watched all the comedy roasts, like
all of them.
Like every single one that Comedy Central did, I have watched them all. And they have not done one in a while for probably good reasons. You're watching extremely famous people make very inappropriate off-color jokes at each other, extremely offensive jokes. And I do not, I cannot really endorse them. But I will just say that Nikki Glaser killed at this thing. And
She's awesome.
Entire event is 3 hours long. But if you're going to watch one person at this event, Nikki Glaser, I saw...
She's like a roast specialist.
Yeah. I saw Emmanuel Acho post online that, like, a lot of people at this Tom Brady roast got standing ovations going up to the stage. And she was the only person that had a standing ovation coming off of it. She completely destroyed, and just wanted to give a shout out to Nikki Glaser. So, all right. I think that's going to do it for us, for what we've been watching, right? So let us wrap it up there and get to some weekly plugs. Weekly plugs, the part of show each week where we plug something else we've been making. I wanted to throw a shout out to decodingeverything.com, my free newsletter, where I am having contributors from all around the internet write things. BJ Colangelo wrote up a review of The Fall Guy. She really liked it. And so you can check out her thoughts over at decodingeverything.com. Devendra Hardwar, give us your weekly plug.
Sure. Over at Engadget, I reviewed the Rabbit R1, which is that freaking useless AI device that people have been talking about for the past few months, right next to the Humane AI pin. These things are worthless and do not spend your money on them. But I had a whole review about that, and we talked about it on the Engadget podcast as well. And good God, just don't buy these things.
Jeff Cannata, your weekly plug.
I do a video game podcast called DLC. The latest episode, episode 546, came out this week. With guest Max Neal from the Voxel Show. He's great. Very fun. Very funny. Really wonderful episode. We talked about the new Batman Arkham game that just got announced. We talked about the weird kerfuffle with Sony requiring players of Helldivers 2 to get PSN accounts. They just rolled back today.
Idiots.
Very dumb move. And we talked about a lot of really cool games, including a bunch of great board games, because Max is a big board game player. It's a fun convo. It's a great show. Check it out at dlcpod.com.
Also, I had a chance to do some game streaming with Jeff Cannata and Christian Spicer from the DLC.
We carried Dave.
Wow.
The aforementioned Helldivers 2.
Yeah. I actually created a YouTube gaming channel at youtube.com/ at Dave Chen Gaming to broadcast all the streams. Nice. So if you want to see that, it's not, this is not like premium gaming content. It's just like, basically like whenever I, I'm saying my stuff in general, not the stuff I did with you guys is premium game, but I'm saying my stuff in general, I'm just like, if you want to watch me play games, it's on YouTube now.
Yeah.
I just stream it, but I'm not like editing it necessarily, into YouTube optimized clips, but I had a lot of fun streaming with Jeff and Christian, and that was a blast. So check that out as well. And I think it's also available if you're a DLC patron.
That's right. That as well. Yes. So,
yeah. All right. I also want to throw a shout out to patreon.com/filmpodcast. Recently, we have reviewed Challengers on the After Dark. We reviewed The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, posted a preview of that episode on the main feed. We're going to be doing a rewatch of War for the Planet of the Apes on the After Dark for this week. So a lot there over on the After Dark, which you can sign up for and get ad-free episodes as well as early access episodes at patreon.com/filmpodcast. Of course, we never want you to donate if it in any way causes you any financial hardship. You can always support us for free by leaving a star rating for us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get podcasts. Leave a review for us. Share our videos. Leave a comment. It really does help. Let's get to our review of The Fall Guy.
That's me, Colt Seavers, and this is my hero's journey.
We're just stopped from the top.
Okay, I'm not the hero of this story. I'm just a stunt guy. Trying to look cool in front of the director of this movie. That's her, who I just so happen to have a major crush on.
We need to keep it super profesh.
Cool. Do you want to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either.
Welcome to the film cast review of The Fall Guy. I'm going to read the plot summary from IMDb. Quote, a down-and-out stuntman must find the missing star of his ex-girlfriend's blockbuster film. End quote. This movie is directed by David Leitch, one of the original directors of John Wick. He's since brought us movies such as Deadpool 2, Atomic Blonde, and Bullet Train, which is a huge hit in 2022. So I was really looking forward to this one.
Let's not forget Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw. How could you forget it, Dave?
It's a really good question. how can you remember it? Might be a better question. But anyway, despite my issues with Hobbs and Shaw, I think what has been true of John Wick and all the other movies he's made is like a lot of great stunt work, a lot of great action,
a lot of great stunt work
in these movies. And this movie, The Fall Guy, is kind of a tribute to the, I don't know if you guys had this. I went to go see this in IMAX and the David Leitch and Ryan Gosling appeared before me on screen. Did you see this?
Yes.
And they said this movie is kind of our celebration of tribute to stunt people. It's nice because I think stunt people don't get enough credit.
That's true.
They don't have an Oscar category. They are often unseen, unknown people.
They're the unknown stunt man who makes Eastman look so tough.
Indeed.
Indeed.
So all that said, a lot of things going for this movie, even just going into it. Devendra Hardar, what did you think of The Fall Guy?
You know, guys, I think I love this movie. Like, if I had enough time this weekend, if my body was not physically just fully injured and exhausted from dealing with two kids for Sunday, I would have seen this movie a second time. I was actually had tickets to get it for Sunday night, and I just kept the tickets going because it's all unlimited pass, man. Add to the box office for this movie.
What we call that thing that was keeping you from seeing this a second time, we call that the Phantom Menace.
It's true. It's also the Phantom Menace. Listen, I had already seen The Fall Guy. I wanted to do something else with my time. But yeah, I love this movie. It is funny, has great action, like all of David Leitch's stuff. I don't think all the sequences work. There's at least one we could talk about in spoilers. I think is just kind of there to be there and doesn't really make a difference to the movie. But overall, like this is what I want from action movies. I want big, sweeping action, really cool practical effects. Actors I like who are funny and who I enjoy seeing together. This is a grand old time. This movie is so fun. I would have loved to just like sit and be in this world for like 4 or 5 hours. You know, like I just absolutely loved the tone of this movie, kind of the vibe of it, everything around it. Absolutely adored this movie. But just like the Academy, audiences did not show up for the stunt people. That's a shame. I take this personally just a little bit because I feel like people are always asking, like, hey, can I have, big movies are kind of new. This is not fully original. I know it's based on a show, but at least the concept is pretty fresh. It's not like something we've seen recently. The stunts that are in here are kind of unique and different and not just like the Mission Impossible stuff or stuff we've seen from other films. And people like these actors. So I'm going to spend the summer just wondering, like, what the hell happened here? Like, the trailers were good. It was being marketed for a while. Like, I think the trailers also sold this movie pretty well. I'm just sitting here kind of sad. Like, here is a great movie, a great time at the cinema, and I really wish more people showed up for it.
Yeah, I mean, look, they expected this movie to do around 30 to 33 million. It did 28.5.
Okay, you know,
like,
sure.
It's a little bit underwhelming. I think people were they expected it to do 33, but I think they were hoping it might break out in a big way because it's well-liked. It has two of the biggest stars on the planet.
If Bullet Train can break out, why not?
Right, right. Bullet Train. This movie did not do as well as Bullet Train, and that's a big problem.
Worse movie.
Right.
A movie I enjoyed, but not nearly on this level.
Not nearly as charming, certainly. Jeff Cannata, what did you think of The Fall Guy?
Well, Dave, what I thought of The Fall Guy is best summed up in the form of a limerick.
Hit us up, Jeff.
With humor and action at once, it's Gosling and Emily Blunt's on-screen chemistry. You'll fall for them and see romance as fun as great stunts.
Chemistry and them and see, Jeff.
Them and see.
Bravo.
Yeah.
Bravo. Bravo.
I agree 100% with everything Devendra said. I might even go even farther. I think this is that rarest of thing in the cinema that I can recommend to every person I know.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is thoroughly entertaining from start to finish. This is a sure bet. If you want to give a movie to your grandma, give a movie to your best friend, give a movie to a stranger on the street that they will go into the theater and have a great time with, The Fall Guy fits the bill.
Four quadrant movie, baby.
This is
four quadrant movie.
As entertaining a time as I've had in a seat in a movie theater in a long time. It is just fun. Start to finish, charming, just wonderful performances, great chemistry from the leads. It's a great love, you know, a romantic comedy, as Jermaine Lucera told us, it really is a romantic comedy in a lot of ways.
Here. Yeah.
Really wonderful set pieces. Awesome actual human beings doing stunts. And it's also a love letter to movies in general. If you are a person that listens to this show, chances are you're going to get something even more out of The Fall Guy.
Absolutely.
Because it's got all these great in-jokes. There's Comic-Con references in this movie. You know,
specific Hall H reference multiple times.
In retrospect, we should have knew the movie was
that was the death knell.
Yeah, was doomed from a box office perspective when they mentioned Comic-Con. Yeah.
It's true. It's cursed. Yeah, I am really sad that I put this as number 4 on my list. It's going to be a massive.
It will be lucky to be in the top 10, basically. Yeah,
this is a massive flaw in my list. But I agree with Devendra, like, this should be a movie that crushes. Mm-hmm. This should be a movie. This is, like I said, as sure a bet as you can get. You will have a blast if you go see this. It's so funny. And you know what I love most about this movie, honestly? The script. It's a fantastic script. Yep. It's got so many wonderful setups and payoffs. It works on a pure script level in a way most movies don't even attempt anymore. You know, it's structurally sound. Everything is there for a reason, and stuff that is funny in the moment also is a setup for something bigger to pay off later. It just is so well made. I really love it. There's not a single element of it that I think is lacking. I can't believe 2 weeks in a row with Challengers and this, I'm like, this is the two of my favorite movies of the year.
Yeah.
Like, keep back it up. To back. And neither of them is doing great at the box office, but it's a shame because I think this is like summer movie. This is classic 90s summer movie.
Absolutely.
Like, you go and you have a great time and you walk out feeling awesome. You don't need to see any other movie to understand it.
Yeah.
It's just a shame that people weren't coming out to see this. It's so good.
Yeah. Again, I think it's doing okay, but Devendra in our pre-review segment was talking about how one of the big problems with a movie like this is it cost over $120 million to make, right? And if this movie had cost $60 million, it would be like, wow, that's a hit, right? It's doing super well.
Yep.
But there's some big stars, some big stunts, some big action in this movie. It almost feels like they're like, we're only going to be able to make one of these movies about stunt people in this era. And so they might as well just
go
pour
for it.
Who cares if they do it, if it does well at the box office or not? Let's just pour everything we can into it. And I completely respect and admire that. Hey, it's not going to surprise you guys to learn, I also had a great time with this film.
Shocked.
I love this movie as well. It's so much fun. There's explicit references to action movies and also homages to action movies in the action scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Love that. But one of my favorite parts about the movie, I think, is that in the movie, Ryan Gosling plays the stunt person of a fake actor, like a not real actor named Tom Ryder, who I think is very clearly based off of Tom Cruise.
But they mention Tom Cruise in the movie.
Yeah, so it's a universe where Tom Cruise and Tom Ryder both exist, which is very weird.
How can that happen?
They cannot occupy the same space at the same time or else they'll explode. Mm-hmm. I think that the reason I bring that up is because I think that in general, it's just worth paying attention to who gets credit for making the stuff that we make. And in particular, something that really chafes me is when I watch all the special features for like the Mission Impossible movies, right? And it's always presented as like, Tom did this, Tom did that. Tom did it. There's no CG. He really did it. And it's like, you're erasing the work of two entire categories of people who worked in the film, the stunt people and the visual effects people, both of whom worked really, really hard to make Tom Cruise look good. And this movie, posits the notion, what if other people helped to make Tom Cruise look good? Right. And
I would love to see Tom Cruise's reaction to this movie.
I want to see Tom Cruise's person's reaction. I think they're like pumping their fist and being like, yes, finally. Yes. And I love that, to hell with how well the movie did at the box office.
Yes.
I love that we have this movie that is just a tribute to all the people who risk their lives to make the pictures that we enjoy. It just is like, okay, hey, like, we can't give them an Oscar, but at least we can give them this movie. And our support of it, and you know, our box office dollars to the,
I have been recommending this to so many people.
Yep.
All weekend long, everybody I ran into, I was like, you got to go see Fall Guy. It's so good. It really feels like, I can't imagine anybody walking out of this movie and being like, well, that sucked. It's just so fun. It's such a charming, wonderful movie. Witty, clever. Also, I want to say, guys, as the only one of us that's a big fan of the TV show.
Yeah, which exists. Yes.
The iconic thing from the TV show from when I was a kid that I wanted more than anything ever is the pickup truck. The pickup truck from the Fall Guy was the coolest vehicle I could imagine when I was six. And it's in this movie. They use the pickup truck. They got it.
All right. Well, anyway, we all like the Fall Guy. A few more things to mention in the spoiler section. So let's get to it. Spoilers for the Fall Guy starting right now.
I thought up an ending for my book.
It makes no damn sense.
Compels me, though.
I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end.
When I buy a new book, I always read the last page first. That way, in case I die before I finish, I know how it ends.
You can't handle the truth!
Inconceivable!
I came here to tell you how it's going to begin.
I don't know how much there is to talk about in terms of plot. It's a very simple plot this movie has.
I mean, there are twists or surprises, but I did want to shout out the Lee Majors cameo for Mr. Jeff Cannata.
It was amazing. I stood up in my chair and went, Lee!
Did you really do that?
I did. I really did.
Were there still people in the theater?
Yeah. Wow. It was a press screening. It was.
You were still the only one.
I was the only one that
you're
got
the guy that the other critics talk about. Like, do you remember that guy?
Remember
that,
the weird Lee Majors fan?
Weird Lee Majors fan?
My only question about this movie, guys, is where did that Miami Vice jacket come from? Because he was a stuntman on Miami Vice. There was a stunt show, but that ended in the 90s. So when does this movie take place? Yeah. Is he 55 years old?
Brian Gosling? I think it was supposed to be the movie, the Miami Vice movie, not the TV show.
It could be the movie, except
the movie with Colin Farrell.
Yeah, but the design of the jacket was entirely
not, it's not the show. Miami Vice logo.
It was entirely.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
The hot pink, like, yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's if it were the movie, it would have like the movie's logo on it, right? Anyway, so that just stuck in my craw. Like, I just have been doing the math trying to figure that out. But a cool jacket. Ryan Gosling in a cool jacket. This movie knows the assignment, right?
Yeah, yeah. My favorite part of the whole movie is they referenced, I think, the Bourne movies.
Yes.
And then Emily Blunt
does
the move from the Bourne movie where she takes a binder and puts it at Ryan Gosling's throat and punches
binder
it.
Binder punch.
And that is a reference to the Bourne.
That's Ultimatum.
Ultimatum, right? When he uses
after
a book.
The chase.
When he uses a book to take out.
But
Dex.
She also uses a pen for a bit too. So that's a Bourne identity
that's a
reference.
Bourne identity reference.
We are sad people.
Is a gag for like 18 people, of which, you know, three of them are on this podcast.
But there's so many of those things in this movie. That's what it's so wonderful how rich this movie is with movie lore and movie references and movie fun. You know, I don't think there's a ton of people that even understand the Hall H thing. It's like,
right.
Nobody does. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what's so wonderful about this movie is it kind of doesn't care. And there's so many inventive, fun, clever things, just the like on set shenanigans of, you know, the way jokes play out, on the set The first shot we get on the set where the explosions keep going off behind them, there are so many awesome camera moves in this movie that like they had to hit just right in order to play correctly. It's just, I love this movie. It's so wonderful.
One thing I really appreciated was that they show you the actual making of the movie in the credits. Yeah,
loved it.
And I think that's actually important because visual effects these days are actually legitimately so good that you might think, oh, those people weren't actually like in danger when they did it. Ryan Gosling didn't actually ride behind a truck on a tiny skateboard.
Bring back
or whatever.
The Jackie Chan post credits.
Yes.
Like, yeah, making up.
Yeah, he had like four stunt people or whatever that were doubling him in this movie. But yeah, they show you like, hey, a lot of this stuff, we actually did it for real. And And you can tell for most of it that that's the case. So I appreciate that. I also had fun imagining what the pitch was for Jason Momoa to be in this movie. It's like, hey, Jason Momoa, come to set for like 2 days, and we're going to have Aaron Taylor Johnston play this part, and then we're going to have Ryan Gosling play the part, and then you're going to do the exact same thing as those two guys.
I just feel like Momoa's down for this kind of stuff. Right. You know, he's just the guy who's down, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's so great. This movie's a blast, man.
It's a blast. Shout out to Aaron Taylor Johnson, by the way, who I think is doing a great job of like embodying shitbag Hollywood, you know, guy.
Yeah.
You know, I think like he is maybe from some personal experience that he's seen from people, you know, just feels like he's really nailing that for some reason. Interesting. Yeah.
I will say it was a little bit upsetting to watch this movie after watching the documentary, The Boy Who Lived, the David Holmes story, which is about a horrifying, or not about, but like, in it, a horrifying accident happens to a stunt person that's like very similar to the accident that happens at the beginning of this film. It's just like, I think it's my sense is that a lot of this stuff happens in relative safety and like thing, you know, certainly in modern day, like a lot of precautions are taken. But there's also like stuff that can go wrong. We've seen like it happens. Stuff goes wrong. With some frequency, and
especially older movies, like
especially older movies that didn't have
they just did things, and hope it didn't kill anybody, and sometimes it did, and it's terrifying. Yeah.
And I think that, I do think the movie gives you a sense that, like, hey, that could happen. Somebody can be sidelined by like an injury, and it does show you like how dangerous some of these things really are. I also really liked the opening shot too, where Ryan Gosling, you know, he goes up and he has the accident. It's all done in one long shot. So you see that it's Ryan Gosling actually doing the thing.
And it's so great. I mean, he has to be charming and act and then prepare for the, I just can't imagine doing that all in one thing.
That's a superpower.
It's
just
amazing.
Like being like charm on a dime. Yeah.
And the movie is so wonderfully self-reflexive about that stuff, because later on it talks about they want to do it as a oner, and there's so many things of the movie within a movie commenting on the movie we're actually watching.
Like, should we do split screen? And then
whole sequence with the split screen is incredible. And the choreography of all of that, for the timing of all of their legs to be onto the table at the same moment, and all of that, level of technical mastery is all over this movie, and it's so wonderful to see. It's these subtle small things that really just show the care and effort that was put in. This is a special movie, and I want more people to see it.
It's hard. Like, I don't want to feel disappointed in audiences, but I genuinely do because of this movie. So I hope it has a long tail. I hope like everyone's saying like, this is great. Take your friends, go back and see it multiple times. Like, I hope that is true, because guys, like, there have been so much garbage that has done shockingly well in theaters. And I think back to last year, right? And Barbenheimer was a whole phenomenon and everything. Barbie was good. Oppenheimer, pretty good to most people. Were they only mainly successful because of that marketing pitch? Like, were people just responding to the hype or to the quality? Because right now we have something that has been marketed, but not with the like fervor of the Barbenheimer like union, and people aren't showing up. So that just kind of makes me sad too.
My assessment is, which, you know, is worth as much as it costs, which is $0 for most people that aren't patrons. Ironically, worth more for patrons. I don't think the marketing did a good enough job making this movie out to be an event. And maybe that's impossible. Maybe that's an impossible task.
Those trailers were long, but showed off a lot of stunts. Yeah.
But I think when you think of like Barbenheimer Barbie and Oppenheimer, it's like those movies were events. Like everyone's talking about them. You have to see it in theaters. You cannot wait for 3 weeks for this to be on PVOD, right?
It does seem like that's the entire job of film marketing at this point. Is why do I need to leave my house to see this?
100%.
And it's such a bummer.
Yeah.
It's
an extremely high bar.
It's a high bar that is that excludes a whole category of movies.
Or is extremely difficult for a whole category of movies.
I know. Right? Yeah. Hey guys, Abigail on VOD this week.
Yeah.
That movie came out 4 weeks ago.
I know.
You know?
Yeah.
Like,
you should watch it, by the way. It's really
I do want to see it. I do want to see it because I did not make time for it in theaters. And hey, I will take advantage of this offer. But I could have waited another 4 weeks. I actually wish like there was more room to give these movies chances in theaters, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for the big event movies, I don't think like Dune 2 is out. Like you can watch it in theaters, but it's also out on PVOD. Mm-hmm. And for the real Kung Fu Panda is still making money in theaters. That's out on PVOD still, you know? Yeah. So like for the movies that people turn out in theaters to see or that are events or, you know, family events, family gatherings or whatever, it doesn't really hurt to have the PVOD available. I know like people feel strongly like, why are you really sitting on PVOD? And Devendra, your sentiment has been repeated many times, but I think it actually like, if the movie's a big enough event, it doesn't hurt that much.
Sure,
in my opinion.
Sure. Well, especially after 4 weeks, like
especially after four weeks. I agree. Yeah. I agree. Like but the thing is for movies, you can know by the Friday evening that the movie comes out, how well that movie's going to do in theaters, basically. Mm-hmm. That is how sophisticated the box office tracking is these days. And so I don't begrudge them for like, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if this was out in premium video on demand in 3 weeks, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to hurt it that much. You know, I think it, you know, so that's me. But I think there is something about the bigger picture idea, like on a picture to picture, I don't think it hurts that much. But I think there is something to the bigger picture idea of people, audiences feeling like, hey, we can just wait a few weeks and watch it at home, right? Like, that maybe does have a industry-wide negative effect, as opposed to like specifically for this title. Who knows? We don't really know exactly what the causes were, but at the end of the day, it's a great movie and people should go watch it. Any other scenes or stuff people want to talk about?
I do want to shout out. I think there's a sword fight that happens, like random sword fight with the girlfriend of Aaron Taylor Johnson's character. Happens for no reason. We never see that character again.
Right.
It's a fake sword cutting through things.
Ends for no reason.
Ends for no reason. It's fun, but it's sort of like, we could have just cut that. Just leave that one for the DVD or something. Because like the whole thing is like, oh yeah, it's a fake sword. It's cutting through objects in the scene. Are those objects also fake? Are those also props? I don't know.
What did you think of the action scene that had like the cartoon, or not cartoon, animated components to it when he's high on some drug? I thought that was kind of cool.
Oh, that's fun. Dude, that's fun.
There's been a million high on drugs visualizations in movies over the last 10 years. This might be my very favorite.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Wow.
The action scene with it is so cool. And just like placing a unicorn in the background, amazing. Just awesome. Just, I love just having a unicorn.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the only thing you need.
That's it. That's the whole gig. Yeah.
I love the truck chase and everything to do. I love the dog commands, the Phil Collins cutbacks, the cutting back and forth between karaoke. It's so fun.
It has kind of
to Phil Collins. Someone got my letters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
About that unicorn stuff, it has this kind of like Zucker Brothers
esque
sensibility to it of like, you say, you know, just like no qualms about being very zany. You know? Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that.
Right? Yeah.
So, and I also just like that the ending kept one-upping itself. Like you're like, oh, the ending is going to build up to this big thing, and then it's like, oh, but there's another big thing. Oh, and there's another big thing. And I think concluding with Ryan Gosling falling off of the helicopter is a beautiful shot. Like it looks amazing. So anyway, at the end of the day, it is really impressive that David Leitch made a movie.
I think he's become one of my favorite directors of action movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting to think about like how Chad Stahelski and David Leitch have gone like their separate ways and people have their own opinions, right? Like Chad Stahelski has made all the John Wick movies and David Leitch has made these other wacky action movies and
not all hits.
Yeah, not all hits.
Bullet Train's so much fun.
Yeah. Bullet Train's fun.
Yeah.
It's more like I am now finally to like, you know, accept that he did Hobbs and Shaw, but I do remember being really annoyed at that movie and how weightless and slick that movie felt. But everything else he's done has been great. Like Atomic Blonde, we should have another Blonde movie. Come on.
Yeah, Atomic Blonde was pretty good. They also have Atomic Blonde footage on screen in this movie. It's kind of like, hey guys, you the audience messed this up the first time by not giving this movie its due, so I'm going to remedy that by putting footage in this. I mean, Atomic Blonde has some incredible stunts. You really got to watch that movie if you haven't yet. So, all right. That's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of the Filmcast. Our theme music comes from Tim McCune from The Midnight. Our spoiler bumper and weekly clubs, weekly plugs music comes from Noah Ross, who also edited this episode. Patreon.com/filmpodcast is how you can support this podcast. Next week on the show, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, boy.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. We're going to do a rewatch of War Planet of the Apes on, is it War 4 or War of? War 4, the Planet of the Apes.
War 4.
War 4.
War 4 of the Planet of the Apes on the Filmcast After Dark. But next week, it's going to be Kingdom. And I'm really curious, you know, how that movie's going to do. Like, is that going to be a big hit still? Or are people going to show that they're not interested in that movie either? We'll see. But I'm certainly excited about it because the buzz is great. The trailers are great. So stay tuned here on the Filmcast. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.